All right, everybody, for the first time ever, back-to-back episodes in 2 weeks for the Something About Soccer podcast. I am Dill40K, as always, one of the hosts, joined today, as always, by Bizarre Brigade.
What's going on, everybody?
And Pixelated Suits.
Hello.
All right, very energetic. We are coming back with another episode about the Club World Cup. We did a bit of a general overview for last week's episode as we get excited for the tournament that is now just coming up next week when this episode is coming out. And we are going to dive in today to some of the transfer moves that have been, you know, not necessarily Club World Cup specific, but have happened prior to it so that they will be reflected in this tournament, as well as three teams we are excited about and we want to talk about moving in to this tournament. So I think we just start it, you know, let's not pick favorites here and pick one of the teams. Let's take a look at maybe a transfer or two just to ease our way into the episode. And I'm just going to pick one that I think I am very excited about. And it kind of just sets the tone for things that we talked about last week. You know, Rayan Art Aitnori from Wolves moving on to Man City. One of four players, really one of three guys that's actually going to play. The fourth guy is a third string goalkeeper. Joining Cherki as well as Tijani Reinders from AC Milan to Man City. All moves that were expedited and made in preparation for this Club World Cup. And obviously Man City are a pretty proactive teams in terms of transfer dealings, but very, very exciting. I feel like this now, despite, you know, their struggle in the Premier League relative, you know, they were still pretty good in the Premier League despite it all. But I think this puts them as a top two favorite for me in this Club World Cup right there with PSG. So Biz, I'm going to go to you first. Any thoughts on the Man City moves, and do any other ones jump out to you as being as impactful as the things that our City is doing for the Club World Cup?
You know, I think City is kind of an interesting one, just with me watching it, because I think you guys have probably had a little bit more of a plugged in viewpoint with it, with more continuous watching of the Premier League season. And mm-hmm. for me, with my schedule, I feel like it's a little bit more fragmented. So I sure. like I'll catch games here and there. I think with teams too, I'm more likely to maybe catch, like, if they are like a better squad that's playing maybe European competitions, just because for me getting home from work here and there, I can catch some of those more frequently, just with how things all fall in line for me. But Man City, just with how they performed, and almost felt like it just kind of felt, I don't even know, like just maybe a little tired from a standpoint of like the style or whatever it is in the limited fashion that I watched. So I think really cycling some of these key cogs that have been key pieces for a while make a lot of sense to me, to have some new fresh faces come in and maybe help implement and maybe even rectify the style and the pace that Pep wants to play at. So I do think that, you know, having some of these cogs, and honestly too, at like even the price point, we don't have anybody at least yet. I shouldn't say that, like, it's not a guarantee with a team like Man City, but I did see also, I should preface this too, saying that in the last like 12 months, they've spent like $350 million despite all the charges that have been brought up against them. So I guess take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but not seeing any, like, you know, break the bank, you know, gigantic moves for a team of that stature outside of, you know, some like 30 million here, 30 million there. And then, you know, a player like Shekri too coming in from Lyon. So it's like you have some pieces that, whether they're going to be rotational pieces or they're going to be actually just injected right into the lineup as well. And then you're going to see some pieces too from that team that also aren't going to be there that we're used to seeing in the Man City jerseys over their run of dominance. So I'm curious what Man City will look like going into this. And I think that's a fair take to say that something like this, where it's kind of like a reason for the team to be re-energized, especially with how the season maybe fell flat mm-hmm. for a lot of the supporters too. So yeah, I don't think that's a bad take at all.
You would have to think too, a deep team going into this tournament. I was just checking how it's scheduled out and with the amount of games. If you play every game, you get to the final, you know, from group stage to final, you're playing seven mm-hmm. games in about a month span. So yep. bringing in extra pieces to have depth post, you know, all the European teams regular season, you know, it's a little bit different for teams like South America, like sure. South American teams who are kind of just at the infancy of their season. I think Brazilian teams have played about 11 games in the initial part of their season. So it's kind of interesting just seeing how each team is approaching it from a squad building strategy, seeing what players aren't included. Like you mentioned, no Grealish for Man City, not getting registered for the Club World Cup. That's a pretty crazy one. But Picks, I'll go to you. Any of these transfers kind of sticking out to you as a storyline that you're interested in?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting seeing Man City, and especially seeing if Pep Guardiola can really mold the team into his own in preparation for the next coming Premier League season. I think the expectation, as always with Man City and the team and the budget that he has, is to win the league in a sense. Or, you know, I think Man City is always kind of expected to push and compete for the league title. So getting the Club World Cup and getting competitive games under their belt is going to be really important for them to move forward.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about it like that. That's a good point.
And it's something that, you know, we were talking about a little bit before Biz got on, Dill, was the comparison of Pep Guardiola's job about having, you know, a coach who's been there for a while, who's been there through arguably three very, very definitive and definable eras of Man City. We have, you know, the David Silva era. Then we have the Kevin De Bruyne era, you know, that kind of meshed with that. And then we're kind of seeing the new era kind of be formed. So I think that that's such an interesting proposal of a coach who's been there at the club, who has a DNA, who has an identity, bringing in those key pieces. Whereas we have another coach in Xavi Alonso, who is a new coach, who's bringing in new tactics, where it's, you know, he's not really getting too many signings. I think the biggest one is obviously Trent. And he has the foundation that Ancelotti laid for him. But obviously we know that Xavi Alonso is such a different player. So it's going to be really interesting to compare, you know, Pep Guardiola, who's a manager who's been there a long time, finding pieces. And then we have another manager in Xabi Alonso. So it's kind of, you know, one of my questions is like, what would be the preference there? Would you rather have a manager who's been there a while who is able to find those pieces? Or would you rather, you know, have a complete revolution with a team that's as deep as Real Madrid and also lacking in some places, even in some defense too? So
it's an interesting question that you pose, but I think for the clubs as big as this, I don't even think that's the question that they're asking. I think the point that you made at the start about these games being a really good way for the players to acclimate themselves to the system, for them to do competitive matches against very big teams, for them to try things out against smaller teams, to get in extra competitive games where, you know, they can really set a good precedent for the upcoming season. I think the Real Madrids, the Man Cities, the PSGs, if they do well in this contest, you know, from an ownership point of view, they really just care about the money that they're making. And in terms of the trophy, I don't really think that's a super big priority. I think it puts them again, it becomes a really good jumping off point for them for the next season. Because, I mean, you know, Chelsea won the last Club World Cup. I didn't really pay attention too much to it. I don't know how much that really means to them in the grand scheme of things outside of the financial gains. I think as the teams get smaller and smaller in terms of reputation, I think it matters more. But also at the same time, the money matters more to those teams as well. But I don't know. I'm getting stuck on your point that I think you make a really great point that this is a good practice run of competitive matches for the summer, that this is not an opportunity that you oftentimes get. But I'll ask you one more question before we go into some teams we're interested in. You said there was the, what was the first era that you said?
I guess maybe like David Silva company.
Okay. The Silva era, the De Bruyne era. What are you calling your shot for the third era? You have to say something about it.
This is the third era. This is what we're seeing.
Can I dub the era?
Pick a player. Pick a player.
I'll call it the Kevin Sullivan era.
That's good.
That's crazy. Picks, bring this man back to reality.
Well, the big thing was, and I didn't mention it early, but like Man City were pretty heavily targeting. I mean, Bayern Munich were also in the conversation, but they kind of wanted Wirtz to be the heir to Kevin De Bruyne. So the fact that that's not it, and Shaqiri has kind of been like a replacement, and he's a very capable player and an amazing player, but he doesn't have...
The Cherokee era.
Exactly. It's not yet. So
no.
He had a great performance against, I think, Spain versus France, but it's still, he doesn't have the hype that, you know, Florian Wirtz gets. So it's going to be tough, and I hope that we can dub an era after him, and I hope that he has a Club World Cup performance that makes it so that we dub an era after him, but...
Wow, you have that much. You put that much stock in the power.
I hope so.
Okay,
I hope so.
Yeah, I think people would be mad if we dubbed it the Holland era too. They'd be like, "Oh my god, he can only finish. He can only finish, bro."
See, yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Where it's like, Man City right now really need direction. So yeah, it's up to the team to decide. You know, who's going to put the team on their back? No one really has done that this season. So,
give me Marmoush, man. That guy's.
I like Marmoush a lot.
I love that dude. Marmoush, he is so fun to watch. All right, let's go. Let's stop talking about City. I don't know if a lot of people like that for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Not the most popular club.
Lowest listened to episode we've ever done.
All right, let's go to one of the richest clubs in the world, one of the most professional clubs in the world. Let's go to another city. Biz, I think you wrote this one down. Auckland City. Dare I call them the bad boys of Oceania? No, more people just left. One of the most dominant teams in the region. Biz, why are you excited about the amateur side, Auckland City?
So I did a little bit more research on Auckland City because it was a team that with some of the little tidbits that we talked about in our last week's episode, it just kind of like piqued my interest. And I thought Oceanic region's representatives are super unique. And it also made me kind of think too, based on what I had mentioned last episode about a team playing in the A-League, it didn't all of a sudden, like I kind of thought about that after we were done taping the episode. I'm like, wait a minute, playing in the A-League, that wouldn't be Oceanic. That wouldn't make any sense because they play in like Asian Champions League.
I also thought it was that team when I first.
Yeah, played. Right. So well,
I didn't realize. I probably said so much misinformation.
Right. So that in itself, I'm glad I did some research because that is not the team that we were referencing. So, and from what I've understood and what I read, it sounds like it's a common misconception because both are from the city of Auckland. One's called Auckland City, which is the team that's in the Club World Cup that does actually participate in the Oceanic region and won the Oceanic Champions League most recently. The other team that I had mistaken it for was a team that at one point did play in that confederation, but has just recently moved to the A-League based on the popularity of the squad. They're playing in front of like 30,000 people on the regular. And Auckland FC is the team that moved over there. So that's the team. In comparison, Auckland City is seeing, you know, like a couple hundred people a game. Like it's a completely different animal. There is an Oceanic Champions League, but there's really no leagues for these teams to play in that is considered professional. I know they've also talked about opening up like an Oceanic Professional League that would be kind of a culmination of a couple different islands out there just to try to like kind of up the game for the Oceanic region altogether. Because when you actually like look into it a little bit further and what teams are constantly being represented, it's like it is pretty clear and obvious that New Zealand is going to be running that. So it's like you would have here and there you'll have like a team from Fiji. I think in the most recent fixture that actually Auckland City won to get there, they beat a team from Papua New Guinea. So it's like there are other teams out there that exist that are a part of this, but Auckland City itself is pretty much the dominating force in the Oceanic region. But commonly, that was the first thing I needed to sort it out, commonly confused for Auckland FC, including by me last episode. So I wanted to make sure to get that right because I thought that was very, very interesting. But Auckland City has been, like I said, they've been a force in the region. They have played in the Club World Cup before back in, you know, in the smaller condensed form in the past. So this is something that's not necessarily new to them. The thing that has really stuck out to me, I'm just reading through. So I actually, Reuters wrote just a little blurb in an article that I'm going to read just a couple snippets from just because I think it is super interesting. But so it actually went over, this Reuters article went over a little bit of everything. But Adam Mitchell, the center back, said, "We're representing 99% of club teams in world football who are amateurs. These guys are not actual, like, real deal professional players. These guys all have part-time jobs. They're not playing the game professionally. The manager of the team literally owns his own dental practice and is not going to be managing at the actual Club World Cup based on personal reasons from what I read." I don't know if it has something to do with work or you just can't like be away from it for that long, but that's what we're talking about here. That's the difference in it, where Auckland City, who is currently they're probably in one of the toughest groups that I would say has been assembled outside of maybe B, where you
I
have.
I think that's the toughest group, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, if we're talking like from, I mean, you could make an argument for Bayern, Benfica, or Boca Juniors to get through and or win the group, and you know, I wouldn't be like absolutely shocked if you said that that had happened. So Auckland City being in that group, that is like such a tall order and a tall task for a team like that. That is legitimately, you know, playing some of these. I mean, if you're looking at the wage bills between Auckland City and Bayern Munich, for example, like we referenced it last go around about just the prize money itself was, what did we say? It was like 10xing what the actual team, what they're typically being paid is what we had mentioned last go around. So it's like, take that. And then on top of it, think about what Bayern is playing just for an individual player. I don't know this. This is an educated guess, but I can guarantee you, like, even one of their just like normal starters, not even their top earner, is probably making more than the Auckland team. That's a guess, but I'm assuming that's not fact checked, but that's like the level of like difference that we're talking about here. And I love underdog stories and stuff like that. So I just feel like this team, even though they're 100% going to get grouped, they're probably not going to get a point. Teams like this and stories like this and the narrative that drives us to a team like this qualifying is exactly why I watch these tournaments. It's why it's what brings me to just love that we have every single club now, every single nation that wants to be or is capable of being represented in these FIFA fixtures. And I think that's what, you know, my love of the game stems from, is being able to have all of those stories and narratives that are constantly created. But if we're talking about just the nitty gritty of like where Auckland City is laid out for where they are in the hierarchy of world football as well, the last thing that I wanted to make sure to mention was in the Opta Power rankings, Auckland City is rated as the 4,957th best team in the world currently. So we're talking about them playing teams like Bayern Munich, Benfica, and Boca Juniors, who currently in the Opta Power rankings are 6th, 24th, and 131st in comparison to the 4,957th team in the world. So best of luck to Auckland City. I think, and Dill, I know you had referenced a player that we actually kind of had a loose tie to with some content creation. But I just think that highlighting a team like this getting into a tournament of this magnitude, despite, you know, people can argue that, you know, you're handed a spot just because you're in the Oceanic region. It doesn't matter, man. These players that are part-time workers are about to go on just like an absolute insane adventure of, they're going to be lining up against players from Bayern Munich here in just like in the coming days. And that is just absolutely, to me, I can't even fathom that as like some take whatever it is for you as like, if you're working a part-time job and still trying to hang on to your soccer dreams, and you're going up and you're going to be suiting up, flying halfway across the world, and you're going to be going up against one of the, you know, one of the 10 best teams in the world, like in just a few days. Honestly, a crazy story altogether.
Yeah. So they have Meyer Bevan, who was from Cavalry FC, and I'm looking at their roster too. This is just on FotMob, so you know I can be fact-checked on this. They have a keeper. They have a backup keeper from Fiji, a defender from Vanuatu. They actually have a Colombian named Jerson Lagos. No photo.
Pix is now a fan.
So that could be fake news, and when I click on his name, it's an oops 404 error. They also have, I don't know if of any relation, but they also have a Boxel. They have a Nico.
I would say maybe, for sure, depending on how it's spelled.
They don't look.
If he looks just like him, that's definitely that's 100% like a brother or a cousin. 100%. I don't know. Right. Like, I can't fact check that, but yeah, Michael Boxel, who plays for the Loons, who's actually having an insanely good year too. He's going to be part of the World Cup squad. So that's super funny. So I'll look into that a little bit further going into it. But Nico Boxel.
And cool thing about Meyer Bevan, 9 games, 8 goals. So he's cooking the league that Auckland City FC play in, which is called the National League Championship. That must just be the Ocean. Yeah, the New Zealand Championship. And so far in this season, they're not even first place. They're second place to another squad. So very interesting. Excited to see how they do. Throw a cheeky $5 on them winning one of their matches, on all three of their matches.
Even just a point, man. It'll pay out if you just say a draw or something. But yeah, I have also confirmed Nico Boxel is Michael Boxel's brother, which I was not aware of. So
that's cool.
That's also a really cool little.
We got a loon.
There we go.
cool little angle to all of it. And yeah, on top of it too, if we're going through, because I just clicked on Foot Mob too, to give you guys a full breakdown, I'm actually surprised there are actually quite a few players that do have considerable market value in terms of like what we're talking about. But the highest market value for Auckland City, there's a couple, there's probably about five or six players that are at the 300K mark. To give you an idea of where we're at with that, if you go into Bayern Munich and go into their squad, the top market valued player right now is Musiala, who's at 145 million. So that market value is more than the entirety of the team of Auckland City by a fair amount, exponentially. So to give you even more
bucks.
more shock statistics and more shock stats of like just how how inferior of an opponent Auckland City is from a standpoint of like the data on the sheets when you're talking about the team sheets. It is something that this team is going to be playing in this tournament, but we love it. We love a good underdog story here. It's Something About Soccer. So that is definitely why they're being highlighted.
They're the second match of the tournament too, playing Bayern Munich. Oh, wow. That's insane.
I know. Early morning. Yeah. It's cruel and unusual that's how that got drawn. Cruel. But
all right. So that is the first team. Auckland City FC. Let's go a little west, not great geography, to South Africa picks. Mama Lodi Sundowns. You know, South Africa is Football Manager fans. It's the only playable league without mods and Football Manager, so we're relatively familiar in it. It's one of the only two jobs I've ever been fired from in Football Manager as well, getting a team relegated. So
wow, I was not aware of this lore.
Yeah, I had to put it there. You know, I'm humble. You know, I'm bragging about being humble, so I'm humble. Picks, why did you choose Mamelodi Sundowns as a team to watch out for in this tournament?
Yeah, so the biggest thing about them is that they're going to be a team representing an entire region of Africa. They're one of the few teams that represent a team that's outside of North Africa. The three teams represented, I'm pretty sure, are from Morocco,
Tunisia,
and then the other one's Egypt. So they're all Northern African. So I think it's really cool to highlight a team that's kind of representing an entire different, you know, region of South Africa in a sense. They're the fourth best team out of the three according to the coefficients. So they kind of have an uphill battle. They haven't won the Champions League since 2016, but they have won the league every year since 2017. And they have been at least second place since 2014. So they're a team that has a lot of dominance domestically, and that makes it so that they have a lot of ambition and they can bring a lot of players in. Mm-hmm. And one of the articles that I was reading was talking about their director of football, whose name is Fleming Berg, which is an awesome name, Fleming Berg, who comes from Brøndby. And they were talking about kind of using that Central European, Scandinavian model of, you know, finding players. And one of the players that I wanted to highlight was a player named Lucas Ribeiro, who they had found because he was playing in the second division of Belgium, and he had 18 months on his contract. So it's very Football Manager in the way of that they're finding their players. But, you know, finding those players and convincing them that, hey, we're a team that we're going to be pushing for the title, and we're not going to take anything besides first place every year domestically, and we're going to be pushing for those continental trophies every single year. I think that's a really good push for a lot of South American sides, South American players to be brought into South Africa in addition to the players that they're developing themselves. So the director of football or the technical director talked a lot about, you know, the recruitment process and how it hasn't been as difficult as he thought to bring in a lot of South Americans. Another one I wanted to highlight was Marcelo Allende from Chile, who played a little bit of time in Uruguay, and he was also on Montevideo and kind of the city system, and then he changed that over for the Sundowns. So I think that they're going to be really interesting. One of the biggest things about them specifically is the matchup against them versus Ulsan from Korea. Mm. That's a match that I think is going to be really interesting because the Sundowns play in a very specific style of soccer called, it's called Shushan and Piano. So it's kind of like the same way of, like, you know, when people talk about champagne soccer and stuff like that, they play very much, you know, passing and keeping the ball. So it's going to be really interesting to see how much they stick to those roots about, you know, keeping that system in play against someone like Dortmund, or if they'll try to be a little bit more adaptable, So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, are they going to be adaptable? Are they going to be switching styles depending on the teams that they play for? Depending on the quality of team, are they going to be playing differently against Dortmund as they do against Olsen? So I think that group is going to be really interesting overall. And I think the team specifically is going to be interesting to see. And seeing if any of those players that they did get in from, you know, the second division, if they, any of those players get moved on after the fact and go back to Europe. Seeing as they might be seeing Sundowns, and they probably are seeing Sundowns as a stepping stone.
I was thinking of some sort of sunset pun, but I couldn't get it out in time. So I'm going to just do a normal fact.
Pick stall a little bit. He's got
to- No. They're actually coming off a African Champions League final loss to Pyramids FC just on the 30th of this past month. So that is kind of the last taste in their mouth coming into the Club World Cup. So maybe something to spurn them on. That is interesting to see. I don't know about their success in the past in regards to African Champions League, but I did see also that they did knock out fellow Club World Cup team Al Ahly in the Champions League as well. So a couple of interesting storylines going into it. I'm very excited for Mamelodi Sundowns. I think you make a great point about it, Pix. They're representing an entire region of Africa where, you know, the North African teams are very distinctive in their way. And then, you know, the mid regions of Africa, the South African region, South African countries of Africa are distinctive in their own ways too. So I am excited to see it. Biz, in regards to all four teams out of Africa, is Mamelodi Sundowns kind of your one to watch, or do any of the other teams jump out to you? Because I know we kind of, you put me onto that Copa, what was it, the Copa Club or Copa?
It's a magazine. Copa 90, yeah, Copa. Yeah, Copa Club's the magazine, but Yep. And that,
yeah, so
I'm bummed that we weren't able to tape this maybe a little sooner, because I would have recommended other people go and grab this if you like the Club World Cup, because it's been such a good resource and it's so cool with even just like breaking down everything from like just like what formations the team runs that you can like expect that, where it's like it's that in depth with usually pulling in some form of expert to write about it that might be a journalist from the area that has more insight than, you know, what a typical person that's just researching it would have. So it's really cool to have that as at your disposal. But yeah, for the African teams, I think like I'm always interested when it comes to all of these different, you know, teams that I don't know a whole heck of a lot about. Again, I think that's the narrative that drives me. So those are always going to be the appointment ones for me, of like teams like that going up against not even necessarily like the big dogs, like an Atletico Madrid or Chelsea or Inter or whatever group that some of these teams happen to fall into. It's more kind of those teams that are battling for like the second and third spots, where it's like, can these teams punch up above their weight? Cause it's like, we know in reality, a lot of these knockout rounds, like the group toppers are going to be the big bopper European teams that are going to probably run through most of these groups pretty handedly. I think most would expect, maybe you do have a team that struggles kind of unexpectedly. That's the fun of these tournaments, where, you know, there's just not playing well and just stuff happens. It's why we play the games. But when it comes down to it, I think it really does come down to, like, a perfect example is Group A. Like I had mentioned, even just like off stream before we started recording, with Inter Miami and Al Ahly in the opener, like, I think that's something that, you know, FIFA wanted to have Messi in the opening Club World Cup game based on, you know, choosing him as the host and having Inter Miami be the host site for all of this. But it's like, Inter Miami has not played to Inter Miami's expectations in MLS coming into this year. And you have a team like Al Ahly, where I think a lot of people come in with maybe a little bit of a disrespect to, you know, what African Champions League looks like and how good some of these teams are. I know Seattle, when they qualified initially, and we were still doing the old, kind of like the intercontinental, like Club World Cup style, where they had to go over across seas and play. I forget where it was being hosted. I think it was in like Morocco at the time, but they played like I can't remember specifically, but it was like they played a North African squad that it might actually have been Al Ahly, now that I think about it. But correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm getting that wrong, but I remember they went over there and they happened to be playing, you know, outside of their league season at the time, and with how this was set up and formatted, and just I mean it was a close game, but ended up losing that game at the time. So it's like, you know, you're flipping the scenes and the environment now, where, you know, they're coming to our neck of the woods and it's changing. But I think there's a lot of disrespect with, you know, some of these African and maybe some of the Asian Confederation teams too, specifically even maybe just looking at it through my perspective of like, you know, maybe some bias with like some of the North American or South American teams, just based on, you know, kind of what we know and where they stack up in it. But it doesn't mean that some of these teams can't play or, you know, play at least to a level that's not going to be, you know, perceived as an embarrassment by any means. Mm-hmm. So, and I think right now the biggest thing too that we saw on the world stage, you know, in the actual World Cup was just how far North African soccer has come, like over this past decade. It's really incredible to see, you know, what soccer looks like now in Egypt, what it looks like in Morocco, what it looks like. I mean, Morocco made it as far as any African team has ever made it. And, you know, shocked the world with their last World Cup run. And it's, you know, that translates to not only, you know, at the club level, but that translates to generations where you see the ripple effects of, you know, what the development looks like over time, or when you have a cup run like that, when you're hitting your stride in those competitions like that and have that wonder run, you see generations are molded and affected by that for the next decade, because you have kids that were watching that when they were, you know, 8 years old. Definitely. And for the first time sentient of what's going on in the soccer world and want to replicate what they just saw. And they go out every day and they're practicing. And then in 10 years at the age of 18, after they've gone through youth academies, are contributing and being a part of whether it's North African club soccer or if it's something, you know, where they're graduating to a team in Europe. I think that's the coolest thing, is this is like something that is, it is kind of like this harmonious and kind of like symbiotic relationship that it exists within all of this stuff. And that's why, like, when people are, you know, kind of saying this Club World Cup's not going to be successful, it's a cash grab, it's like, I totally understand all of that stuff that comes from it. But when it comes to these types of things, I think that's what's so cool about it. And that's why I cheer for teams from North Africa and want to see all of these lower tier squads do well and, you know, give it their best effort. Cause I think that's what is on the line. That's like what's at stake for a lot of this stuff. It's like it's a bigger than just these clubs situation when it comes down to it.
Yeah. And just to add to that, a lot of these, like, especially, you know, I was thinking about the Ulsan versus Mamelodi game. Like, that game, besides the sporting, you know, sporting and, you know, besides the I won and all that, there's a lot of money on the line. I'm not sure
100%.
I'm not sure how much it is, but I think there's maybe like $3 million per win.
Yeah,
which is,
that's,
you know,
so crazy.
That's a great point too. Yep. I'm not sure, because I also know that there's also like, if you win as a team from a team that isn't European or South American, there's different like pay scales to the champion. So I'm not sure if that's also true of the win bonuses. But at the same time, the amount that you win, and especially if you're facing a team that you can win, I think Ulsan versus Mamelodi is an even game. Those games, there's going to be so much on the line. Like, I imagine there's probably bonuses on the line for those games, especially we've heard about some issues with them at Seattle and some successes a little bit with Real Madrid offering such high bonuses. So I can imagine even just, you know, get out the group stages and we'll get you this money. And I think that that's going to put so much more fire under some of these players' bellies. In addition to maybe even getting out of the situation that they're in and going to a potentially higher paying league or a league that might get them a national team call up. Where you might not get that, you know, I don't know what the case is for a lot of these countries, but it's going to be really interesting to see how much fight there is in these games where it's like, you know, these aren't really glorified friendlies because there is so much on the line. Whereas a lot of people are kind of treating them and seeing them as these glorified friendlies, but, you know, I really don't see it that way personally.
Yeah. And to kind of add on to that, Dill, are you okay? Just because I think that would almost be kind of a more natural progression to just like matches that we're excited for, with maybe just kind of some of those games highlighted. Because before we get into your squad that you wanted to talk about, because that kind of got me on a rabbit hole of wanting to discuss like just kind of what Pick said about that Ulsan and Mamelodi matchup. Yeah,
let's hear it.
You know, like LAFC and Esperance, for example, and like some of these teams that, like, if we're talking about like the predictions of like what teams actually are capable of, just based on the group draw that they received, for example, or some of these matchups that we're excited for, there's so many different ramifications as to why, you know, why this is interesting, because the framework of the actual club, based on if they're able to pull a draw or a win out of some of these games, is like, it could be huge. And it could be, you know, the difference between a team maybe going on this like colossal long-term run as a club within their confederation based on the money that and the fallout and them investing it correctly after the fact that this happens. Exactly. I think that's the thing that's the most interesting about this. So I wrote down a couple ones that pertain to just obviously my own personal perspective with like LAFC being featured. Cause I do think like LAFC versus Esperance, which is the Tunisian side, that's the second game that's going to be featured for LAFC after coming off of a game to Chelsea that they'll probably lose. So it's like, you have a game on the 20th, which is the second game of the group for both of these teams. That would be just like such a highly heavily pivotal game where if either one of those teams is able to pull 3 points out of that, there's like an actual, you know, realistic shot of a game three where if things break right and you manage to figure out how to pull a tie and things go right in other games, you could actually find yourself, you know, in a knockout round where it's, so those are the types of things where it's like, if you and your draw happen to break the right way based on, you know, even just like what matches you get in what order, you know what I mean? It really mm-hmm. do make a huge difference. So LAFC Esperance was the one that I wanted to highlight when it comes to that. For the actual money side of things, I thought that that was a really interesting game because that is such a huge colossal game for both of those teams when it comes to the actual, you know, maybe even long-term health and just the stature of their clubs as they go forward. It's like this, like even springboard where they can kind of have that continued success, not only in this tournament, but like even going forward too. But then you have like other things that you could point to on why you're excited about, whether it's like a matchup like Pachuca versus Salzburg, where it's just like two teams that I think that are
group specifically. I know first place, but everything was below that, like it's a coin toss 1,000%.
Yep. And it's funny you say that too, because I highlighted two games specifically from that, and it's for very different reasons. So Pachuca versus Salzburg, I just think that group itself is just like you said, very well balanced. I could hear arguments on why any, like outside of Madrid qualifying for one of the two, right? Yeah. I think like any of those other three teams could qualify for that second spot, and I would not be surprised mm-hmm. because it truly is. I think Pachuca is a very quality Liga MX side that is very, very capable of playing well on the right day. Al Hilal obviously has thrown so much money and they're kind of at a point right now. That's why I actually put them in Real Madrid down for that first game, where it's they did not bring anybody in this short-term deal, despite so much effort and trying to bring in and swing for the fences for some of the signings that they were looking for over this like short-term window, and them completely striking out. I read actually an article today from one of the Saudi journalists that came popped up on social media for me. They had like this like huge like $150 million. That they had set aside for anything that they wanted to do in this short-term window, and they were not able to use any of it because they were not able to get any agreements. They weren't able to figure out any loans even internally within the Saudi league, because like even like El Etihad like wasn't willing to even, I know Conte was linked with them even just on a short-term loan. Just
the whole Ronaldo thing.
The Ronaldo thing. Yeah. So it's like, there's so many things that Al Hilal has as a story where like they swung and missed and just like had all of these options. So it's like, they're really trying to rely on these players that they brought in, you know, over the last go around, that when it comes to the actual Asian Champions League, as of lately, it doesn't sound like they've really delivered. So that's an interesting storyline between them and Madrid. And it's like, can players of the pedigree that were once in that Europe, in those big European competitions and now have played in Saudi, can they still contend and play with a team like Real Madrid? I think that's super interesting.
And are they going to care about the financial benefits if they're already making so much money?
Exactly. Exactly. They're fat and happy, right? They're fat and happy. But yeah. And then the last one that I had written down was Botafogo versus Seattle. Just kind of in the same field as like a Pachuca versus Salzburg, where it's like, if Seattle or like any MLS team truly wants to have even like a shot in hell, that's the game that they're opening up with. It's like, you're playing at home all these times. It's like, if you're not pulling 3 points out of that game against Botafogo, and I still think it's borderline impossible for them to do so, like you might as well just pack it in for the remainder, because it's like you have absolutely no shot of, you know, contending, and it will just be kind of like, we're here for vibes after that. But I don't know. What about you guys? Because those were the couple that I wanted to highlight for various reasons. But Pixie, I know you highlighted one. Dill, do you have any that like stand out to you for any specific reason?
Well, to be honest, I'm trying to find a good game to go to at the Rose Bowl for cheap.
There you go.
I mean, in a perfect world, that River Plate Monterey game would be good.
That's really good.
Those tickets are going to be expensive. They are expensive. I already looked at it.
I think sneakily too, that game with how much money Monterey spent, I think that game could sneakily be for like who moves on in that group too.
That's what I was thinking. I was just looking at
really do. So that would be a really fun one live.
Yeah.
I also know I'm very interested because I read in that Copa magazine that we got, Biz, that Urawa Red Diamonds apparently have a really big contingent of fans that want to travel for the Club World Cup. So
that's awesome.
It would be, you know, maybe I could be like the guy dancing with all the Senegalese fans. You know, I'd be the, the Filipino dude with all the Japanese fans.
I love it. Yes.
That's what I'm doing with the Brazilians. I'm just going to go in the parking lot and just do some haggling for some barbecue, some Brazilian barbecue.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. But in terms of specific matches that I'm excited for, I feel like you've named a good amount of them. Porto Palmeiras, I think, you know, is the obvious one for me that we've already spoken to a little bit. In terms of groups that I'm most excited to see who comes out of it, I mean, like, even looking at Group D, where Chelsea, Esperance, yeah, Flamengo, and LAFC, that's a great one. I look at Group E, the one we were just talking about, where, you know, River Plate or Monterrey, and, you know, I don't think Urawa Red Diamonds could do it, but it just feels like there's a lot of groups here, maybe outside of like G with Juventus and Man City, C with Benfica and Bayern. And Group B, I feel like, with Porto or with PSG and Atletico Madrid. I feel like the rest of the groups, there's three teams. I feel like there's at least two or three teams fighting for that second place spot, realistically. I feel like Group A feels like the one where just anything can happen. There's a world where Porto might not even, you know, qualify. I don't think that's going to happen. But that feels like there's the most parity there. So I'm just excited for all of these matchups. And, you know, there's obviously going to be that darling team that comes out of the group and is like, oh, wow. And then they knock out another team. Maybe it won't happen. Maybe it will. But I'm hoping.
Well, let me ask you that too, because that's interesting. Who do you guys have anyone tabbed as somebody, like, at least initially? I don't know if either of you have fully gone through, like, because we did like the little bracket prediction that will be live in the Discord. I have one that does stick out to me, but like, even just initially, Dill, on like gut instinct, is there one that like does kind of stick out to you? Picks, if Dill can't think of one off the cuff too, feel free to jump in. But because
I have a sleeper team,
a team that maybe would shock some people that you think that is going to get into the knockouts, maybe not make a run, but just like maybe sneaks in that knocks out a team somebody was expecting to get in, or team jump out at you out of curiosity?
I think, you know what, I don't know if you could call them a sleeper team because of the group that they're in, but I think people might be sleeping a little hard on a team like Al Hilal, who have a lot of good veterans. I know they might be sitting on their stacks and stacks of cash, but I feel like this is a group of a lot of veteran players who still have something to prove, and playing against the likes of Real Madrid is going to reignite things, playing against Salzburg, who are no slouch. They're a very, very solid European team. And they've got a lot of that's a team with, I feel like, with a lot of the most recognizable names of a Saudi type team. Kalidou Koulibaly, formerly of Chelsea, João Cancelo, Ruben Neves, and Milinkovic-Savic in the midfield is very, very good. You know, they might be on the wrong side of 30, but incredible players. And then rotating up top, Alexander Mitrovic, you know, we love him.
Big Meech.
Other than him grabbing the referee at Fulham. Yeah. And then Marcus Leonardo, who is like kind of like,
dude, he's not been cooking there too.
I know he has. Yeah. He pulled a little, you know, not the John Duran before the John Duran, but, you know, South American striker that went to Saudi, you know, at an age where you're like, oh, come on, go somewhere in Europe. But you understand it when they're making that much money. It's kind of hard to say no to that outside of the ethics of it. But like, you know, making that much money is insane. So I do not blame those guys at all. But yeah, I would go Al Hilal. I don't necessarily know if that's like it fits the whole premise of counts. A sleeper.
I don't know if they would necessarily be, I'd have to check odds, but I don't know if they would necessarily be the favorite out of Group H to be two.
They're probably favoring Salzburg and Real Madrid.
I can look when Pix is kind of going through his, but I think that qualifies. I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. Pix, what about you? Do you have one that stands out?
Yeah, I think Pix is going with Inter Miami.
no, I'm actually pretty against Inter Miami. I don't think they're going to do too well. I think they're actually going to be fourth. Yeah,
I think they're getting grouped.
This might be a little bit different just because I'm going with the European team, not necessarily to win it all, but I think that a lot of people are kind of writing and overlooking Atletico Madrid. I have them going all the way to the semifinals.
Dude, I have them in my final. That's so funny.
Ooh, final. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I guess we know what we're talking about.
Well, it might not be a good thing for you that I predicted that with how little I won, but you never know.
But yeah, I don't see enough people talking about how good Simeone is, especially in the terms of like, these are all knockout games. Like Simeone, I think I have him going up in the quarterfinals against Bayern Munich. And I think Bayern Munich probably have better players, but I think that Simeone is 10 times the manager that Kompany is at this current moment. So I think it's just going to be like Simeone's experience of being in these super high level competitions and having his players run through fucking brick walls for him. I think it's going to be like, that's what's going to be the game changer. And I think that that's kind of what you need in these knockout style competitions. You need that manager who's, you know, you could have a really good manager who has the best tactics in the world, but if he can't motivate you guys to do what you guys need to do, then you guys aren't going to be able to win and lift the competition. I do have him getting knocked out to City in the semifinals at MetLife, though.
I think that was the matchup I had. So, like, I think we're in the same page
but there. And yeah, then, I have them going pretty far. Biz has them in the final, so I think that he's on board. What about you, Biz? So, Dill, what do you think about Atletico Madrid?
I actually, I'm high on them as well. Okay. I think they're really
maybe I misread the pulse check. Then maybe I'm just going with what everybody else is saying.
It's hard to go against a guy like Griezmann, whose favorite athlete is Derrick Rose. You know, you just can't go against a guy like that. They also have, well, he's injured now. They have Clement Lenglet, a former Tottenham player. He was kind of ass for us, but you got to show support where you can. And obviously, you know, they spent a huge bag on Julian Alvarez, who's honestly been one of the best players. So I think they got a great squad. They got Conor Gallagher in the midfield as well. I don't know. I think it's fair to say that people are writing them off. I mean, they have Jan Oblak in between the sticks too. That guy's an incredible keeper. I feel like amongst the like when you're thinking of the big European teams in the competition, they're kind of like the team that's like
the
exact middle point between like the big ones and, you know, the relatively small, like more smaller Portuguese squads in there. But they could definitely upset some people, and they're in a very fun group, I think. As well. So I think those matches are going to be very fun to see. I still need to fill out my bracket to see like the trajectory of where teams will play. But now that I said all that stuff about the Saudi Arabian team, I kind of have to get them going out of the group, huh? I can't really
get them there, right? To also shed some light on my question, because you guys were so adventurous with your picks here. The odds to this is just to reach quarterfinals, so this is not the first knockout round, the second knockout round, but we'll take it with a grain of salt just based on where we're at. Like Dill's Al Hilal pick, they're +400 to make it. That that is in front of both Salzburg in the group and Pachuca, so they were technically expected to finish second. So Dill's dark horse expected to finish second, and then Pixels is at +115, and I think they're the ninth favorite to make the quarterfinals. So I'm gonna try to save us a little bit with my pick. I have a team that currently is at +1,000 to make the quarterfinals. That is below the Urawa Red Diamonds and Seattle Sounders, which kind of surprises me, to be honest with you. But I have Monterrey making it out of their group, and not only doing that, I have them beating Dortmund in the round of 16, just to be adventurous. I don't actually think, like, realistically it's going to happen, but I feel like whenever you're picking brackets, my strategy always, especially too in like college basketball, I always like to try to kind of find picks where it's like, I know a team has no chance in hell for the next round either way with Madrid. I think Madrid beats either Dortmund or Monterrey, you know, whoever makes it out of that round of 16. So I was just adventurous, and I'll be like, see if I can be different and do something like that. But I do think Monterrey will qualify for the round of 16 and get out of their group.
It's going to be awesome. But for me, I went with River second, because I think that's going to be a coin toss.
I do too. So. But I think out of the North American teams, that is, let me double check too, just to verify, but I think that is the only team that I have qualifying out of North America right now. Yeah. I think it's the only team, just with how things are lined up with their setup. I do think Pachuca like maybe could as well, but I don't know. I was looking through a little bit more on even just the rosters with like Salzburg and stuff. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know how they're able to, how they figure that out. And just kind of looking through things. I know like River Plate's is going to be a challenge, but Monterrey, man, there's some money spent in that team. That is, there is some players.
I think it all depends on that game. It all depends on the Monterrey River Plate game.
It will. It will come down to it for sure. But that is the one team that I think is kind of the dark horse that maybe people are not. I've watched that team quite a bit, man. I've watched them. You know, I've watched some Liga MX games. I've watched them. I've watched them play Champions League regularly, and it's like there's some. I mean, people forget that Sergio Canales, who was featured in Europe in La Liga for a good long portion is there right now. I featured the young Mexican player, Ambrace, who's starting for them. It's like there is some talent. Nelson Deosa is a part of that team as well. So there is some talent in that team that I do think could cause some problems. But yeah, you're 100% right. It's going to be one or the other. I can't live with myself if I didn't have one North American.
Yeah, no, Biz, low key. I think that Monterrey have a better chance against Dortmund than River Plate do. To be honest, I think Dortmund is probably one of the weakest European teams right now. So dude, I think that's going to be good.
You guys got me. I was filling out part of my bracket. I was, you know, using some insider information while you guys talk. But as soon as you said Monterrey going through, I had put them fourth in that group. So I also can't, if I'm trying to go to that game, I can't be like, oh, I think Monterrey are going to go through, but I want.
Yeah, you got to have a little something on the line, right?
Exactly. Something, right?
Yeah, you got to do but it.
Absolutely. I filled it out quickly as you guys were kind of, you know, it's all a feel thing for me. You know, I see vibes, the game differently, vibes. Right?
Yep.
I'm going City being PSG in the final. I think City with their the amount of reinforcements, and I was high on them at the
City
start,
PSG.
Yeah, I think City. Ooh, PSG.
Okay, I have PSG beating City in the final. We have the same final.
Yeah, I think PSG are going to ride their high. They have all their incredible young players. Yeah. I mean, they're literally an FM Wonder Kid team, bro. Like, they built their team so well.
I think Man City need it more, but I think Luis Enrique isn't going to allow their heads to drop.
No.
I don't think so, but it could happen because they are young. Like, they are, like...
I think we're going to see
they're
City...
not gonna care as much.
Kevin De Bruyne is going to play in the Club World Cup, correct?
I don't know.
I honestly don't know either.
Because there's a here we go to Napoli, so I don't know.
I have no idea.
Let me check.
I think his contract, I'm pretty sure, ran out prior to it. So unless they agreed to something, I'm pretty sure that's a no go.
I guess instead of fully, I'm going to quickly say it, you know, because we're kind of coming near the end of this episode. But I would like to talk a little bit just about. I am excited about Palmeiras. They're one of the teams that I'm most excited about in terms of South American teams and teams outside of Europe, mostly for their front three. I feel like they have a lot of exciting players. You know, we love here, you know, love Facundo Torres, formerly of Orlando City. Yep. One of the funniest goal highlights I've ever seen in MLS that he hit after, that was insane, 7-8 deflections in front of the goal, and then he finally tapped it in. But he's been killing it for Palmeiras, locking down that left wing. Obviously, we give a shout out to Brazilian Fury. That's a squad too. Estevao, who is joining Chelsea post-Club World Cup. Not sure what his plan is in terms of development amongst the, you know, tens of 20s of other players that are coming in for Chelsea. And then Vitor Roque, another interesting player who tried to go to Europe in form of Barcelona, didn't work out, and he came back to Brazil, kind of on that Gabigol tip. We'll see how he does in this Club World Cup. But I think that front three is very, very exciting and can compete with a lot of different teams in this division. But I guess that just poses a question that I kind of want to talk about to wrap up the in regards to, like, you know, that Kevin De Bruyne situation and players possibly playing and possibly not. You know, you see teams like Chelsea who they're registering. They're only going to register for the Club World Cup one player that was out on loan. Everybody else is not going to be playing with them, which is pretty interesting. But the thing that I say is Estevao is going to be playing, you know, a last little run with Palmeiras, Franco Mastuano, a little last hurrah with River Plate before going to Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stories like this where players may be playing their last bits of games, in this tournament. I don't know. It's something that's super unique and you don't really see a lot. And we talked about it in that first episode, but is there any bits of those players that you're most excited to see? I think for me, it's Mastuano just because of the Football Manager connection. I think the best player that we're going to be surprised by is definitely going to be Estevao. I think he is an incredible, incredible wonder kid. And I think everyone's talking about Mastuano now just because the Estevao deal went through. Like, it feels like, I don't know, a year ago, even though it's only been like half a year. But I don't know. Do you guys have any preferences towards some of these players? Are there any players like last hurrahs? You know, Di Maria at Benfica, he's got to be close to, you know, retirement. I don't know if he's going to play another season at post this Benfica season, but that's also a very exciting storyline as well.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think Estevao is for me more exciting than Endrick is as a player. I think that like he's going to bring so much if he does play for Chelsea at the end of it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see that. But I think that players like Mastuano, which you've even seen, like we've shared the clip of that free kick,
Beauty.
And that's one of like the biggest things whenever I tell anybody about his talent, people who haven't seen him, is that he scored that free kick, you know, in one of the biggest games in South America, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the biggest rivalries in the world. So the fact that a 17-year-old can do that is insane. So it's just like the mentality, and that's kind of what you see, and that's a precedent that's been sort of set by a lot of players, that you see that like those young players who really have their head screwed on right are the players who are going to make it far. You see Yamal, how he's able to carry himself for the most part in an extremely mature way. You saw Messi coming and super shy and reserved. And then you kind of see like the opposite of it, where it's just like there's players like John Duran who kind of has that arrogance that, you know, it kind of, you know, he got he's not in the Colombian call-up anymore. He's been kind of in hot water. So it's kind of interesting to see like the mentality of players and how that fixed, like how that attaches it. And I think it's gonna be really interesting to see, especially on the Brazilian side, because there's been so many players who, you know, after they leave Brazil, it's so hard for them to come back and give the same amount. So giving Palmeiras a Club World Cup to end it all would just be a crown jewel before you leave. And that's true of any team, including, you know, Mastuano doing that with River Plate, or, you know, any player that's leaving, including players who are retiring. So
just even, I think even too, for like South American teams, and this isn't to like diminish, because yes, I definitely agree. Like, I mean, winning it would be an absolutely unbelievable, but even just like going on, you know, a cup run and knocking out a couple of those European teams on your way to like, would be such a, would be such a cool accomplishment, and kind of a, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that I take away from this tournament before I go into just a couple points that I had too. But I think this tournament really is kind of like a, like bring your chips to the table at the poker table here and lay them down and see what's what and who's got the best hand. And, you know, for the longest time, and still to this day, I think we'll find out after the Club World Cup is over that, I mean, this is, it's Europe's world from a soccer standpoint. We're all just living in it. But what the Club World Cup will be able to do now going forward, like with each four-year segment, you're going to see the progress that these other confederations are slowly starting to make with the amount of prize money, with the amount of infrastructure changes, with the amount of you know, level of interest in the various regions where they're starting to actually focus and I think prioritize the sport more than maybe they have in the past as well, with whether it's how they focus on infrastructure and development and create, you know, how they create those pathways for youth players to play, all these different things, right? So it's a long-term slow burn for a lot of these teams to catch up and figure some things out. So I think stressing that too for what this is I think the thing that I would definitely like to close out with saying that I think that's what makes this tournament down the line, the long-term potential for it. But two other things I had, cause I was helping to fact check and help. So De Maria, Pete, I had in the back of my head, I was like, I thought they already had his career decision was already decided. And I was right. Rosario Central, he's going back to his boyhood club. So that is already, but that's post Club World Cup. So he will be playing and that'll be like his final send off there. And then he's going back home. So that is officially decided. I remember reading that. That's why I wanted to make sure to put that in there, cause I thought that was a really cool little tidbit too. And then the player that I'd probably say I'm most excited for now, cause I just saw that he officially withdrew from the England U21s and is going to play with Dortmund, is Joby Bellingham. I think, cause I've never personally really gotten to watch him play at all for Sunderland. And I'm excited I'm excited to see what that looks like, especially with a team like Dortmund, where that sounded kind of like there was some other, maybe there was some other pathways, obviously too. I think some teams in the Premier League were kind of sniffing around. Obviously he could have stayed put too. He was about to play in the Premier League with Sunderland. So it's like, there's a lot of different things that could have come about with that, but handpicking and choosing that he wanted to go to Dortmund, I think is really cool too. And, you know, prioritizing and wanting to hop in and get on with the team right away and being a part of it with this Club World Cup, I think is a really cool story too. So I'll be excited to watch him with both the Bellingham brothers playing too in the tournament. I think that's kind of a fun, cool little angle and story as well. And yeah, it'd be pretty cool too. I mean, I was looking at it through the bracket, and I mean, based on where my bracket is, they would be playing each other. If Dortmund doesn't slip up to Monterrey, they would be playing each other with how it lines up with where I have it, where they'd be playing in the quarterfinals. So that would also be pretty cool too, to see a Bellingham versus Bellingham in the quarterfinals as well. So that would definitely be the one I think that sticks out to me.
Well, two things for me as well that I wanted to talk about, just because you're talking about the Dortmund stuff with Job and in regards to another English player. Chelsea have been really pushing to sign another Club World Cup. So from Chelsea, they're trying to get Jamie Bynoe-Gittens from Dortmund before the Club World Cup. That's getting stalled out crazy. And as I was trying to do a little research on it, you know, I say this with a huge grain of salt. This is like a Japanese Twitter page talking about it. Chelsea have submitted an offer for Brighton star Kairo Matoma ahead of the Club World Cup. I don't know about that. I watch me just be totally wrong. And good thing it's at the end of the episode. But it's just funny all these teams like trying to sneak in deals, and especially teams both competing in the Club World Cup.
How does that work too? Because I thought, isn't the window closed already? I thought it closed on the
I think it just closed. Yeah, I think
so. Like, was that they're trying to do it on the run up here and they're swinging, or is there still like a way that they could figure out how to do it? Well, because technically, I know too, like other teams are signing players, so it's like it could be, you know, obviously proactively for not the Club World Cup, right? Where it's like, you know, you're talking elsewhere, but that's
I'm not sure. I think one player, you know, I didn't want to mention him because, you know, we got done dirty by him in the national window here. But I really do think this may just be the Arda Güler fully coming out party, this Club World Cup. I love the guy. He's an incredible, incredible player. I think people kind of sleep on some of the Real Madrid, like, real youngsters, because not many of them play like a ton of minutes the same way you kind of see a Lamine Yamal play at Barcelona. So maybe it's the end. Maybe we get a little more Endrick this summer. Maybe we get a little more Arda Güler this summer. I am more excited about Güler as a player than Endrick.
Watching him at Euros, like the couple of years back when we were doing, I was doing watch parties on my Twitch channel, and that was the first time I had always kind of heard about him, and that was the first time I got to watch, like, I watched all three Turkey games. I was just like, dude, that, why is that guy not, like, obviously there's reasons for within the club and all the players that he's going up against with Madrid, but I was just like, why is that guy not playing at Madrid? Like, at the time when, with what he was doing on a Turkish side, I was just like, so, yeah, I can't wait for his breakout into, like, into prime years. I think that guy's going to be pretty special.
Also, just unrelated before we end, just how wrong were we about Kevin De Bruyne coming to the MLS? He's joining Antonio Conte. Come on.
He'll be back.
Just 1 year in Napoli. Then he comes to Chicago.
1 year and done.
You can look at it a couple different ways too with that, because it's like, yeah, De Bruyne was a big one that had been kind of like early rumors. The amount of different teams that I think he was like linked to as well. I think I've kind of learned through my few years now of trailing MLS rumors, the moment you start getting kicked around to a couple different teams within the MLS like transfer mill, it's not usually it's not looking good for you and your prospects of moving over to the league. I know the big one that like always had legs, you know, for the longest time was Antoine Griezmann, because he had personally said like himself that he had interest in the league, and it just like, you can't fault the guy. It's like the guy just loves Atletico Madrid and just keeps getting, you know, wooed back. And I think Diego Simeone like just wants him to be a part of the team as well. And I get that one, but that one was disheartening, because that guy's been talking about coming here since he was like in his prime in his 20s, where like, you know, we were kind of thinking like, is this guy going to be one of those guys that like hops over at like, you know, Emil Forsberg age, where he's 31 and like still has like 3 years of tread on the tires and like takes over the league. But no, now at this point it'll just be like, it'd be twilight years where you're just kind of like,
I know he's 34 right now. Yeah, he signed another 2 year deal.
So that dream is officially dead. And it's a shame too, with something like the club World Cup with LAFC, where they had to kind of scramble too. And we can close out with like the transfers on the short-term window. I made sure to add at the very end there, with Dillerson coming in from Club America, this was kind of like a last gasp. It was the only MLS team that made a move in the short-term window, which I thought was actually like kind of unbelievable. Seattle has absolutely no excuse. Miami has no excuse to not do anything with it. And like you said, picks exactly, like with Seattle hosting too, like I don't understand, you know. I'm sure there's probably some logistical things when it comes to like, you know, trying to woo talent, but it's like, that's something you should have been doing for a long period of time up to this. It shouldn't just be these 10 days where you're trying to go out of your way to try to bring in prospective players. This should be something that you've been looking to do for the last like 3-4 months. And so I do think LAFC bringing in somebody, because I heard that Under actually went back to Fenerbahce too, and is not going to be playing in this. So this was kind of like a like for like swap out too. So that's something even more to consider with LAFC, where it's like, they're not even necessarily bringing in an extra piece to add. It's like, this is somebody to replace somebody that was leaving. So it's like, it's one of those, and this is a loan to buy option. And I was reading in the League MX subreddit that every single person, not even a like Club America supporters. They were all just like, dude, this guy is so bad. Like, so I take that for what that's worth. But I thought that was a pretty funny line of what I learned about that too. I think it's a loan to buy. The buy option was $5 million, I think. So, but it sounds like this guy is very much just speed. And that is from what I will say about LAFC. They definitely have a type on the wings where it's just like, byline, get there, let Denny Bwanga carry and just shoot 30-yard just bazooka missiles with his powerhouse right, and you move on. But we'll see, because I think LAFC just plays. I think they're the best team that has a chance to actually move on if there was hope for an MLS side. And
that's who I got. Yeah. I think they're the most complete team of the three. So
their style too. I think it's more just where they're kind of doing that like. They kind of do the bend but don't break defensively, where they try to sit compact, and then they have so much speed where they'll just try to hit you in transitional spots. And I think for any team in the world, no matter who you are, like if you're good at that and you're really good at in transition with speed, I mean, I don't care who you are from a defensive standpoint, people make mistakes in transition. It happens. So I think that's conducive to upsets. Exactly.
All right, last one before we sign off. I was just looking through, you know, past week transfers of players coming, you know, to some of these teams. Jorginho from Arsenal to Flamengo?
Yeah, he's like 34. He missed a lot of the season. He played so like random. 14, 16 Dude, games.
The Brazilian league's starting to pull some, like, not only good players, but like just really random fun players.
When I was thinking about that too, I was like, oh well, yeah, what team is Depay again? Because he scored some goals in this last international
window. He did, yeah.
Did you guys see the Payet things?
Okay.
Yeah, he went to Vasco, right?
Yeah, he had a whole like. Well, it's crazy. Worse because he got like contract rescinded because he had like. A whole, you know, he had a whole list of naughty things going on.
No.
Not even worth sharing on the podcast or set up on your own time.
The streets won't forget Left Foot, though.
But. Well, yeah, Piet's a dirty, dirty boy.
Him and Cucho hanging out, or are we talking even worse?
Probably. No, but worse than Cucho.
Oh, no.
If I saw Cucho Piet, I'd be worried.
That's a straight to jail or what?
No, it's not as bad as jail, because it's like, okay. You know, what you can do whatever you want in the privacy.
Bonk, no horny. But... like, get out of here.
That's too funny.
Dimitri Piet, who knew?
All right. I think that's where we can call it for today's episode, guys. The Club World Cup is right around the corner. Games will be starting up right when this episode is kind of coming out.
Next day.
Yeah, so we are excited. Join the bracket if you're in our Discord.
In the Discord.
Or, yeah. Me, Pix, and Biz have all created some brackets. Who'd you have winning it, Biz, if you don't mind me asking?
Hold on one second. It was PSG. PSG, Atletico. So literally same group, PSG, Atletico Madrid. So 1 and 2 in that group. And I have PSG beating Atletico Madrid in the group and at the end of things too.
Okay.
So
all right.
And I both got PSG. Dill got City. Nope,
that's not going to be I think this is the Haaland era, guys. The complete striker. He can pass, I swear. He can. But other than that, guys, we hope you enjoyed the episode. A little bit of a shorter one. Again, we'll continue to do some more specialized episodes as events like these happen. But remember, like, comment, subscribe. We appreciate everybody here. Something About Soccer podcast. Nice grassroots, North American-focused podcast.
Watch and parties, potentially, too, as well.
Yes,
so
yes.
Keep an eye out for those for
watch parties on the way. So until next time, guys, be safe, and we will see you in the next one. Peace.